to Remembering Your Oneness with Zane Daniel and Monica Kupiec, where we know everything, and so do you.
All right. Hello.
Aloha. Loving that shirt. Really loving that shirt.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. You know, it's funny. It feels like we just did this like 2 days ago. It doesn't feel like an entire week has gone by since the last time we did this. Does it feel like that to you too?
I could agree. It seems a little too soon that we're doing this again.
Too soon.
Just kidding.
Okay. All right. Well, goodbye, everyone. See you next week when we're both ready to actually talk to you.
No, okay. It's fun. I'm so ready.
Awesome. Good. Well, we've got a couple people watching, so please say hello to us. Let us know where you're at and what you're doing and what's going on in your lives. And what do you think today's topic's going to be about? I mean, we said that the topic is written above and it says suffering is unconditional love. So I would love to see what other people think that could possibly mean if you haven't already watched my video that released today. And we're going to just sit here in silence. We're going to sit here in silence until people respond. No, we're not going to do that. So, okay. How do we want to start this? Because I just introduced and nobody's commenting. So I guess we're just going to have to dive into it. Well, actually, this, Monica, what did you think when you saw that the topic was suffering is unconditional love?
It felt like a familiar topic for some reason for me. It almost feels like it's second nature type of thing, where it's like an alchemy type of thing, where when they're suffering, there's a huge lesson for you to receive, or a message to receive. And usually that message is from unconditional love or that frequency of love. So it's like you're being put into this like sphere or bubble of suffering, and you're being like washed until you finally get your cleanse of, oh, this is actually a form of love, or this is something that I needed to push me into love.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Oh, that's one of the many, many ways that we can look at that. If we think about suffering as the thing that we have to avoid in this life, suffering is the worst possible thing that we could ever experience, and all I want to do is avoid it, then how successful are we at avoiding it? Generally, as far as I've seen, not very successful, because we fear it so much, we end up thinking about it so much, we end up praying about it, we end up experiencing it in the worst possible way, we end up trying to run full speed away from it, and yet it seems to follow us. So from all my experience so far, trying to avoid suffering is how you make it stay. Have you experienced that too?
Avoiding it keeps it going, is that what you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I could see that happening, because I guess from all the different heartbreaks that I had, it's like not like I was running away from the emotion that I was going with, but there was definitely a repetitive cycle that I had. So it was almost like the lesson that I needed to learn, I didn't fully embody it or accept it, which is why I kept getting that suffering of not well-matched partners. So that's like one area of suffering that is relevant to me,
yeah,
that I can find the connection to.
Right.
And then I'm definitely seeing a shift now too within the last like year. So there's definitely like, you know, a level up. Like there's so much suffering that can happen over the years, but you know, it's gonna get better and easier once you start to dive into it.
Yeah. And so the phrase that comes to mind when we talk about avoiding suffering makes it stay is what you resist persists.
Mm.
Right. Have you heard that phrase before?
I don't think so.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's cool. That's one of those ones that we hear a lot in this spiritual space. What we resist persists. And it's because we're trying so hard to get away from whatever the pain is or the thing that we do not want, that we end up using our manifestation powers in reverse. We continue to manifest what we don't want because we focus on it so much. If we focus on what we do want or the positive results, then we're more likely to get those because, again, our powers of manifestation, how powerful we are, we're going to generate what it is that we focus on. So if we focus on what's wrong, we generate more of what's wrong. If we focus on what's great or what we want or what's beautiful or what we know is great and beautiful and what we want, then we're more likely to get those things.
Yeah. Have you heard of the concept affirmation?
Affirmation. Yeah, okay. I've not heard it, but I'm piecing it together based on the way that you pronounced it. But go ahead.
Maybe it's pronounced differently, but it's just how I pronounce it. But it's like you're already telling yourself that you have this, or you're already embodying it. Instead of saying like, I am unconditional love, it's like literally like knowing that it's already happened. Because sometimes the I am is like a future state in a way. You can kind of tone it in that way, like, oh, I am. So your thoughts are already like, oh, well, I am going to be this, or I am going to be that. But it's like rephrasing these words so that way it's totally like within the present state. I might be explaining it wrong, but there was something that clicked when I saw like affirmations come through.
Yeah, I wonder what. Yeah, I don't know if I totally get it based on how you described it, but it's interesting because whenever we do these things where we kind of change the word a little bit to insert another word, it's always interesting because we get to see. Okay, so affirmation, just like affirmation, focuses on the positive. It is the same, except it's asking a positive question rather than using a statement. So, that's what it was. Right. So I just looked it up. So an affirmation is saying, I am unconditional love. And then the affirmation might be saying, am I unconditional love? And then maybe what happens there? So you've asked the question, then what?
Mm-hmm. You ask the question, then it rewires your brain to think that, oh yeah, I am this. Because instead of stating it as a statement, it's just a statement. But then when you counter that question, kind of like saying like, oh, you're really judgmental, and then you're gonna constantly think like, am I judgmental? And then you embody that like judgment type feeling versus like, am I unconditional love? It's like, hell yeah, I am. Like your vibration then changes because it's like, yes, I am this. Like you're answering that question,
right? And so the whole affirmation where you're saying, I am unconditional love, everybody likes me, everybody, you know, that sort of thing, it was kind of made fun of a little bit. And if we look at pop culture here in the U.S. especially, you can think of Saturday Night Live skits where the character is saying, everybody loves me, everybody thinks I'm great. And then, of course, he's the butt of the joke, right? Like he's trying to convince himself of something that isn't true. So I do like the affirmation idea where you ask the question, because that also helps you develop your ability to speak to your guides or to your higher self or whatever, because who's going to answer that question? It could be your own mind, which is fine, but it could also be a divine thought that comes through. It comes through your crown chakra, your third eye, and now you're actually talking to your guides or whatever. And that's a beautiful approach to take. So I like that for multiple reasons. Yeah. And then it's not you trying to convince yourself, which is what an affirmation is. I'm trying to convince myself that I am unconditional love. I am trying to convince myself that I am unconditional love. Instead, like you said, am I unconditional love? And you receive an answer, you go, oh yeah, you know, I must be. And so that feels a whole heck of a lot better. Nice. Okay. So going back to suffering is unconditional love. We have some new people. Hello. Say hello to us. Let us know who you are and what's going on in your world. And tell us, how is suffering actually unconditional love? We're going to talk about that. I feel like I'm about to say, we're going to talk about that after this. Let's, we shift to commercial. Here we go. We're going to commercial. Hi, everyone. I'm a commercial, and I'm so happy to see you. Okay, now I'm done with that. Marie, back. There it was. And back to your show. Oh, my God. We lost half of our viewers. They were just like, he's too crazy. I can't do this.
It's making me smile. I'm sure other people are smiling too.
Okay. Yes. All right. So nobody's responding. So fine. What were you going to say?
I was going to say to the people that haven't watched your video, aka me, what do you talk about in your video about suffering and unconditional love?
Sure. So one of the things that we, okay. If we go on the foundation that what we resist persists, and we absolutely hate our suffering and want to do anything we possibly can to make it go away, then we are only going to incur more suffering. That is generally how it works. Mm-hmm. So if we look at it in the opposite way and we say, hey, suffering is positive. Suffering brings me positive experiences, brings me new possibilities. It brings me growth and expansion. It brings me lessons. It brings me a power, because if I can handle my suffering, then all of a sudden I realize how powerful I am. It goes on and on. So if we look at suffering as horrible, then we're more likely to experience it more. But if we start to look at it as helpful, then it changes. The whole thing changes. Now our suffering we don't suffer as much. It's not as painful. It's not as bad, because we can say, oh, I'm suffering right now for a great purpose. Maybe I don't know what that purpose is at the moment, but it's not that important for me to know that. What's important for me to know and to know deeply is that all suffering that I have is for my benefit. It's it's for me. What happened? It's nothing. The suffering doesn't happen to you. It happens for you. Okay, so if we can start with that, then we're going down the right path. Now suffering is not going to be nearly as painful. But to be able to say that suffering is unconditional love is really kind of a tough statement to make, because those who are deeply suffering will say there is no way that this is unconditional love. This is this is torture. And I'm sorry, but unconditional love is not torture, Zane. You don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So we have to step all the way back to the perceptions that we have of the universe. And we can go back to the title of the show, Remembering Our Oneness. We are all one. We are the creator. We are all the people that we have interacted with. We're all the negative spirits and entities that we have interacted with. We're all the positive ones. We're absolutely all of everything. Okay. Well, what are we? What is this oneness that we're talking about? This oneness that we're talking about is unconditional love. This mouse that I use for my computer, this mouse is made of unconditional love. This awesome shirt that you like so much is made of unconditional love. Everything that we have on this planet, everything that we experience is actually unconditional love, because it is the one and there is only the one. So in that way, suffering is unconditional love.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's also a choice between choosing suffering and having like pain or suffering being done to you. It's also your perception about the situation, because it's like when I signed up to go to an ayahuasca retreat, I knew I was going to suffer. Like I understood that it's going to be heavy. But during those heaviness, what I realized is every time I purged and then laid back down, I could feel that love energy just filling me up. Like I was depleted, and then my balloon body was just filled back up with so much love. And that's what I could feel. And it's like during those moments, you realize like, oh, okay, I really needed to let this go through this pain or through this suffering. And then after that retreat you know, 2 years later, I slit my head open surfing. And it was the same scenario where I became just super aware in the moment when that accident happened and started calling in all my guides to who wanted to come in. So it's like that pain and suffering didn't turn into guilt or shame or like that form of, I guess, resentment or something that's like, why did this happen to me? It's more of like, okay, now I'm trying to embody, or not trying to, I am embodying myself as love. And that pain starts to go away because you're just raising that vibration. So I feel like your perception in the moment of pain and suffering can easily switch around to that, like that alchemy type of thing that I was saying, is going to shift into that vibration of love. And you're going to become more self-aware to how powerful you are or who you are supposed to learn to do, be next. So I feel like, you know, what you're saying is that suffering is unconditional love. I think it first starts with that perception of knowing, you know, that knowing I am one, but also knowing that this pain here is about to shift me so much. It might take me months with this pain. My first injury lasted for 3.5 years. That pain literally helped me understand what unconditional love is. It helped me love myself and helped me determine my authentic self, because when I was being authentic, that pain was gone. When I was being inauthentic, that's when the pain was the most dominant. So it's like when you are suffering or when you are in pain, it's literally teaching you something. And all you have to do is just ask, be like, hey, what's going on here? Observe your surroundings, observe what you're doing, because then you can tell if you're aligned or misaligned with yourself.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I do want to say too that, well, okay, let me go ahead and show Jaybird's comment here. I look at suffering as a valid experience. I don't really mind it, even when I'm struggling with it. And at its worst, I don't want it gone. This is exactly what I'm talking about, because if you can take that approach to your suffering, then all of a sudden everything changes. So I was essentially mentally and emotionally abused by somebody at my work at the video game company. And during that time, I wanted that suffering to be gone, and I didn't choose it, like you were talking about, right? Like I didn't choose to have that happen to me. So for years, I dealt with it. I struggled with it. It irritated me. I couldn't figure out how to get over it. And then one day, as I began my awakening journey, as I was still working there, I had a realization that this being, this person who was essentially abusing me in those two ways, was actually doing me a service. Now, they didn't know they were doing me a service. They mm-hmm. just, you know, were that way, right? But actually, when I tuned into, oh, so I can look at this as I want this guy to go away and never come back, or I could look at it as, hey, this is my opportunity to actually transcend it, to actually mm-hmm. get through it, or even thrive under the situation. And as soon as I started looking at it that way, the entire thing changed. Now I wasn't in fear anymore. I wasn't worried about what he did, said, or thought, or whatever. And I got so fearless with it that I actually started standing toe-to-toe with him and saying, hey, this isn't cool, even though he ranked above me. So it changed everything. And then as soon as I started standing up for myself and for others that he was abusing, then the abuse began to cease. Like that's mm-hmm. what he needed. He needed somebody to actually do that. And so I was rewarded essentially for shifting my perspective of the situation. So this is why it's so critical. This is why I talk about it so much, because you can frame whatever negative situation that you have as something positive, and then you get something out of it. You know, you wouldn't know, Monica, how much I quote you on this one thing, because you said that you felt like enlightenment was when you could go home and move in with your parents. I tell people this all the time because it really helps frame what they've been doing their entire lives. Like, oh, I thought enlightenment was being at peace and in this beautiful, incredible, loving state. Well, it is, But you've got to be able to maintain that even under the most adverse circumstances. And not that living with your parents is the most adverse circumstance, but for many who didn't have the best relationship with their parents, that is a really difficult challenge. And most people resonate and really well with that one.
Yeah. Well, speaking of challenges, what about this challenge that you face with yourself with when people brush their teeth?
I wonder when this is coming. Oh, all we gotta do is do this. All right, then it's no problem anymore. It's perfect. Yes, yes.
Okay, I know you hate this. Why do you hate this so much?
Okay, so I don't hate it. So what happens is anytime that I see someone brushing their teeth, hear them brushing their teeth or whatever, I get these very, you know, the fingernails on a chalkboard thing. That is exactly what happens to me when I see someone else brush their teeth.
But so, that's unconditional love, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. 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 I, and it's funny because I tell people about it because it's so unique. I don't think I've met anybody who has ever said that bothers them. But for some reason, it even bothers me. If I imagine it, if I picture someone brushing their teeth, I get the same exact feeling.
No way. Even pictures? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. Pictures? Yeah. I can just feel it in the back of my neck and my whole body just gets these, you know, the negative chills. Like there's the positive chills and then there's the negative chills. That's the negative chill situation. So thanks so much for bringing that up. I really appreciate it.
But so have you tried doing one of your activations on that?
Because I really haven't because, you know, I don't really look at it as something.
Yeah. You like that really, suffering?
Right. I don't really look at it as something that needs to be fixed. It's something unique about me. And so I'm kind of okay with it. I mean, when I'm watching TV or a movie or something and somebody's brushing their teeth, I have to kind of do this sort of thing. Sometimes I'll even do this, right? But because it can really bother me. But at the same time, what does bothering mean? It's not like, you know, I'm passing a kidney stone. It's just this, you know, temporary uncomfortable feeling. <That's good. laughs> Oh, this is great. Anjali says, I had a sleep paralysis and heard someone in my bathroom brushing the teeth. Oh, wow. Yeah, well, so then, and there was no one there, I'm sure, Anjali, right? So you probably were kind of freaked out that there would be, why would there be anyone in my bathroom at all, let alone, why are they brushing their teeth right now? That's great.
For me, it's one of those, like, comforting sounds. Like, I, like, truly the sound of it. That's it's like the sound of self-care or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's the sound of unconditional love for me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. The sound of unconditional love. Excellent. Okay. I like that because I can shift. I can shift my perspective of the teeth brushing thing.
Well, I mean, like, it's someone taking care of themselves. Like they're brushing their teeth. So it should be like, I mean, not should, because that's an ego. That's a judgment that it should be a happy sound. But like, I don't know. Like for me, it's like a comforting sound when I hear someone do it.
Right. Yeah. And so like, you know, Jaybird, we live in a very small space, right? So she will brush her teeth. She talks about it right here. She pulls the curtains over her face and turns on the music very loudly. But, you know, I tell her that she doesn't have to do all that. She still does it anyway out of respect for me, which is great. But it isn't, you know, it isn't necessarily as bad as she might think that it is. It's just one of those things that I would prefer not to engage in. And it's funny because she'll be just talking to me and brushing her teeth. And I'll just kind of look at her like, you know, what you're doing right now. And she's like, oh no. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you're probably not paying attention to what I'm saying anyway, because this is happening. So it's kind of one of those funny things.
Yeah. But her doing those actions of turning the music on loudly and making sure you don't see it is a form of unconditional love too.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's like your pain is actually helping her to embody that unconditional love to make sure that you feel good, or that she's already brainstorming ways to not like avoid it, but to make sure that you're comfortable.
Right. And she also brainstormed ways with you on how to make me uncomfortable live. So I don't know really how much of that is unconditional love. No, of course, it's all unconditional love.
It's been months. Fun. Every episode, we're like, oh, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? And I have actually was like, no, it's not time yet. It's not time yet. And then this one was just, you know, the icing on the cake.
The topic,
you know, the cherry on top.
I know the story of all this. I know you were going to do it a bit during a grief episode, but then it was like, oh, that seems inappropriate when we're talking about grief. So
I know I had my toothbrush out too, and it's like, oh, this is not the vibe to be doing this.
Right. Yeah.
But I listen to my intuition, so it's more of like not when I'm going to do it, or like, you know, putting my devil ears on and like, you know, making you feel uncomfortable. It was done with intention. Like I knew there was going to be a right time to, you know, to talk about this.
Right. Yes. That's great. A right time. this very important and deep topic of the toothbrush thing. Yeah. And you know, I don't think fingernails down the chalkboard have ever given me an actual problem. Just the toothbrushing thing. It's weird.
Well, going back to like grade school when teachers would write with chalk, I actually cringed at that one. Didn't like it.
The squeaking of the chalk.
Squeaking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I want to read Mandy's thing. I had a major fear of judgment from others and didn't feel comfortable in that judgment until I realized it was me ultimately judging herself. Until I realized that, I hadn't unconditionally loved myself for years. We are our own worst enemy. But once I came out of that chrysalis, it might be a cool word that I don't know, amazing things started happening in my life. So that's great. Oh, that's where butterflies come from, I'm being told through my ear. That's awesome. Thank you, Mandy. Yeah, absolutely. So if you are in a state of fear of judgment from others, that means so many things. That means that you are also judging others, most likely, and you are judging yourself. All, you know, those three judgment things, it's very rare that somebody is like, they judge themselves very harshly, but they don't judge anyone else and they don't worry about being judged. That almost never happens. It's if it's one, it's all three almost across the board. So if you think about it and you go and you think that you're just one of those, if you think, okay, I only judge myself, I don't judge others, check again. You probably judge others way more than you realize. Oh, I judge others, but I don't worry about being judged. Check again. You probably do, but it's happening at a subconscious level. So that's a great point that you've made, Mandy. Thanks for bringing that up.
What about the topic of, because pain could also, and suffering can be like a stage performance fear where you have this embody of like being seen.
Yeah.
So where does that stem from with switching into the unconditional love state of being able to perform? Is that just like low self-esteem, or is there like a different correlation to that type of suffering?
I love this one, because what's actually happening when you are afraid of being in front of an audience, then you are afraid of being perceived incorrectly. You're afraid of being seen as bumbling or wrong or you know, a mess or whatever. And so that's what's great about it, is that you're having fear of judgment from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So the craziest thing about that is that when you have that much fear of what the audience thinks of you, then you are going to be so nervous that you're going to make that true, where you're going to not be able to deliver the message as well and be scattered and so forth. And so you're going to reinforce that to yourself. Oh gosh, I can't get up in front of an audience. I can't handle, I can't do it. I'm an idiot. And what's kind of funny about that is that in many, many cases, when we're sitting in an audience and we're watching someone and they're nervous, what do we do? We don't usually go, get that person off the stage, they're an idiot. We instead go, oh my gosh, I'm really pulling for them. Oh, I really hope they can get this figured out. I can't wait for them to hit their stride. Or, boy, I really hope that this doesn't bother them too much, or on and on. So you're essentially reaching out to the person who's struggling in some way, or you don't even notice it. It's all in the head of the presenter. They think they're screwing up, but they're actually not screwing up. And everybody in the audience is like, yay, I like this.
Mm.
So much of that kind of suffering, that kind of worry about your judgment is manufactured in your own head.
Hmm. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people struggle with that. I mean, even I struggle with that too. And okay. I noticed when I painted like twice on the beach, and I noticed that, like, oh, this isn't so bad. It's not so bad doing this in front of people. But like, I was definitely in a more quiet area, but I feel like if I go into a more busier like beach setting, I feel like it could help me like release those type of that like resistance to it. Like even me doing the markets has helped me a lot with, you know, showing up for myself and becoming more confident in what I am doing, like with my art. So it's like almost like the pain and the suffering is teaching me like to be more myself, because it makes me feel so uncomfortable. It's like, what do I really stand for? And then breaking through that pain and that suffering, because now when I go to markets, it's like, you know, easy breezy. It's like so much fun. So it's still like, I feel like if someone is going through something like that, it's like you got to keep going, or you got to keep pushing through it until you feel that, you know, that breakage from it. And then unconditional love can flow through you, through your words or through your art or through your music.
I have had the fear of public speaking pretty much my entire life, and I can't even tell you why. You know, it's not like I had some traumatic experience about speaking in front of others as a child, and now that's just a prevailing thing. But what I did is I put myself in situations as much as I possibly could to practice, to be in front of a group, to be the one that had to speak. And while it helped, it never fully went away until I started doing activations. And one of the activations that I did is and I have it for free on my website, it's a remove nervousness activation. And as soon as I recommend that people do that like 15 minutes or so before they're about to give a talk or run a meeting or whatever they might be nervous about. And it's amazing because it totally clears that, all that stuff, like that vibration in the chest or the butterflies in the stomach or the cloudy mind or all the different, the shaking hands or whatever, all the different symptoms that come along with nervousness in front of a group, is like immediately eliminated. And I got to do it before I gave a talk in front of more than 100 people, like 120 people at a pretty prestigious event. And I was pretty nervous about it leading up to it. But about 10 minutes before I gave the talk, I gave myself that nervousness activation. And so I went up on stage and I was so comfortable that I was like leaning on the podium, watching everybody walk in, 100 people streaming in, didn't bother me at all. And I was so comfortable that someone in the front row even said, wow, you look so relaxed. Like, yeah, I feel like I'm about to talk to my best friend, not 100 strangers. So it really made a difference. And once I did that, then it retuned my nervousness. So I wasn't tuning in to the same nervousness experience anymore. Before I gave a talk, I'd have a little something, but it was nowhere near the level that it was before. And then I had a realization that I described earlier, which is that, I am worried about screwing up in front of others. That's what's making me so nervous, which makes me screw up in front of others. So it was self-reflective or cyclical. And so all I had to do is break one of those, and then it really went away.
Well, it's just remarkable that you yourself like did that. Yeah, it was the activation, but it's like you got to that state of like, I want to overcome this. Like, hey, guides, tell me how to overcome this. It's like you truly tuning into yourself to move forward with your career, to give the messages that you need to those 120 people. And who knows, maybe you're going to be doing more and more of those eventually and reaching more people. But because you didn't, if you didn't had done that activation on yourself, the vibration of the room probably would have been different, or you would have gotten like different feedback. So yeah. It's still like remarkable that like you were able to just use who you are and then just show them your presence.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And it was cool because there was like a handful of people in the audience that kind of gave me a little standing ovation, which was my feedback that, okay, it worked. And I was able to deliver the message clean and clear rather than having to battle with nervousness and remembering what I'm supposed to say or all those different things that come up when you're in that situation. So, yeah.
Yeah, because then you were speaking and flowing with unconditional love or through your source and through your guides. You're channeling then instead of, you know, reading something scripted. Because even when you read something scripted, your guides are going to be coming through like, oh, wait, we got to pivot and shift and elevate this message even more.
Right. And it wasn't scripted so much as there were categories. And I can even forget the category, right? Like, oh, no, there's a category that's supposed to go here. And I can't think of what it is. But it all flowed smoothly. And, you know, I was starting to do a lot of speaking engagements before COVID. So the original reason that I got on the road 2 years ago was to go around and give talks and so forth. But all that dried up and it still hasn't really resumed. So I've had to change just like everybody. I've had to just shift into a new way of doing things.
Yeah. And what you're doing is very remarkable too.
Oh, well, thanks. And you know, right back to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's see here. We have lots of wonderful conversation going on in the chat room with the participants. So we love that there's a little bit of a community of amazing folks like Mandy and of course Jay Bird and Anjali. And somebody else just joined us. Hello, beautiful soul. Right back to you. Unfortunately, it says Facebook user because you're in the group where you actually have to click on a link to put your name in for your name to appear. But oh, it's Valentina. I'm getting information that it's Valentina. Hi, Valentina. Welcome.
Oh, I know who your secret messenger is.
Yeah, I have a little bird over my shoulder, literally, that's telling me what's going on.
So. So I guess a question that I could have, I'm assuming that's just what I'm receiving, is what's one step that you can advise for someone that is in a state of suffering to let unconditional love in?
Well, okay. So this one's interesting. So first of all, to open up to the idea that it is positive, that there is a positive result, allow yourself, even as painful as it is, allow yourself the idea that, okay, this could be something that I can gain from, that I can learn a lesson from or whatever. You know, you hear the stories, there's all these great like fables and stories about, okay, so there was this family in you know the early 1900s where the father had, you know, lots of little kids, and the father was working on the farm, which is their mainstay for survival, and he breaks his leg, and someone comes over and says, "Oh no, you've broken your leg. You can't work on the farm, and your kids are too little to help. You know, something. This is terrible." And the farmer who broke his leg says something to the effect of, "Well, yeah, but we never know." And then a week later or something, there's World War One, and there's a guy who comes by that says we're drafting people into the war, and they take a look at him and his broken leg and they say, "Oh, nope, you know, we're not going to take you. You're injured." And so the neighbor comes by and says, "Wow, what a fortunate event." And the farmer says, "Well, you know, we'll see." And this just keeps happening, like, "Oh no, a terrible thing." And then that terrible thing turns out to be amazing. But then the amazing things turns out to be terrible. And it just kind of keeps in this sine wave pattern. That is all, again, teaching you about how to look at your situation. Yes, you can look at it like, this is amazing. And And it could turn out to be not amazing. Or you can look at it as, this is freaking terrible, the worst thing that could ever possibly happen. And it might just turn out that something amazing will happen to take its place. If you lose something, you've lost it so that something new can replace it. So on and so forth. So if you are in this place of saying, this suffering is terrible, I say at least the first step is to open up to the idea that maybe it's not. There's more mm-hmm. steps, but I'm going to shift it back to you so you can give some thoughts.
Yeah. Well, for me, it would be just being present that you're in this situation and then not judging it that it's bad or good. It's just being in that present state of, again, like I said, like just calling in your guides to see what's coming through. Like I slipped my head open. I could have had fear be my first instinct, but my first instinct was to call in my guides, to call in whoever wants to help me during the situation. That was my flight or fight, like fight mode. So again, like if you feel that you're just suffering so bad, or you're just, you know, you just broke an arm or you broke a bone, or, you know, maybe you like crashed into someone, like a car, like a little car accident, or maybe it was a major car accident, like be present instead of that letting fear come through first. Like that may take, you know, a moment or two to realize, like, oh shit, like you can say, oh shit, like I think I said oh shit when I sliced my head open. It's like, huh, like what was this? But then automatically you just start to channel what else there is within that situation, because you're never really alone. And I think when something traumatic happens, or when you're in a state of pain, you feel you're alone. And I think the first step is knowing that you're not alone in the situation.
Right. Because, okay. Yeah. So another step that I talk about all the time is saying, okay, ask yourself deep down, this deep knowing that you have, are you going to get past this suffering in your life? Mm. Do you know for sure that you are going to get past this suffering? And most of the time when we dive deep enough, we realize, oh yeah, this is just temporary. When you frame the problem as temporary, because maybe you have some sort of chronic suffering. And if you frame it as chronic, meaning it's going to happen for the rest of your life, then the suffering is even worse, because you feel like that there's never going to be an end to it. But everything has a solution. And so if you also dive deep and tap into that knowing that it's going to be over, it changes the framing of the suffering. You go, oh, okay, this is just temporary. I'm going to get through this. And I say this frequently. If I have a suffering moment and someone is trying to help me through it, I just go, I appreciate this, but you know what? I know that this is temporary, and mm-hmm. I kind of need to experience it for a short time, and then it's going to go away. So let me go ahead and do that, and I know I'll be fine. So that it's just like getting a cold. Do you think you're going to have a cold for the rest of your life, or do you know that you're going to get over the cold? You know you're going to get over it. So now you don't get there, lay there and go, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to sleep again. No, you just say, well, for the next couple of days, I'm probably going to have some trouble sleeping because my nose is all stuffy or whatever, but that will clear itself up on its own. So that just that attitude, that approach really changes everything.
Yeah. It's like a form of acceptance that you've accepted that you're in a state of suffering. So you're just going to follow through it. And it could be, you know, a day or two, or it could be a couple years that you're in it. But it's like that form of acceptance that helps you to wake up, or helps you to return to the present state and slowly but surely start to remember, you know, your truth, or as we say, your oneness.
Right. The next thing then is gratitude. I mean, I do a thing where you walk up the full frequency chart and you say acceptance, optimism, and excitement. But if you don't want to do all of that, jump to gratefulness and say, okay, even though I'm suffering in this way, I'm grateful that I have. And then, you know, maybe you've got a support system. You've got people in your life that are going to help you through this. Okay, then I'm grateful that I have that support system. Maybe you have you're in physical pain, and so maybe you have a comfortable place that you can go while you experience this physical pain. Well, you can be grateful for that comfortable place, because maybe you know, what if you didn't have that? What if you had to stand all the time while you were in this physical pain? So, you know, just moving, because we talk about this all the time, but gratitude is a very high vibrational emotion, and suffering and being frustrated about suffering, or being disappointed in yourself, or feeling unworthy because you can't get over it, or being impatient about it, or on and on. Those are lower vibrational emotional experiences, and they're only going to perpetuate the feeling. But if you can move into excitement or gratitude, or open yourself up to unconditional love, which is essentially, I love anyway, despite this negative thing, then you're going to surround your suffering with a positive and high vibrational emotion, which will start to make it deteriorate, the suffering, and turn into something positive, because also you'll start to get ideas as to why it's positive. I mean, what if you did your gratitude practice that I'm grateful that I'm suffering? You know, most people will go, what? No way. I'm not grateful that I'm suffering. I want this shit to be gone. But if you can actually say, I'm grateful for this suffering because it's going to result in an increased relationship with this person, or it's going to make me stronger, or make me, you know, whatever, then now you've actually addressed the suffering with something positive. And then when you can do that, you do realize that suffering is unconditional love, because it's actually driving you to a higher vibrational emotional experience.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
Feel that.
It's nice. This is one of those days where we're not getting a lot of questions or comments from our audience. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, what else do we need to talk about? You've done really well.
I feel like people are listening, because it's such a hard topic. Like, you know, it's definitely a vulnerable topic too, because not a lot of people like to express, you know, the pains that they're going through, or expressing the feelings that are going on, because sometimes it's hard to understand the feelings that are happening. Like, you know, me and you, like, we've gone through a lot, and it's just natural for us to talk about these things, because this is what we do. Like, this is what we do and teach people. But for someone that is just really foreign to opening themselves up, or to just speaking up, like, this is probably just something they just want to listen to right now. And maybe the next show there'll be more questions, because they'll be able to integrate what we're saying, and then, you know, move forward with it, or be able to practice what we are saying, like, you know, doing gratitude. Like, I can't just do gratitude right now about all my suffering. Like, that's just a lot in a couple seconds, you know? So it's like, I feel like this show or this topic is heavy. Like, I watched your YouTube, like, very briefly, like, but the first couple moments, I could feel how heavy this is. And I'm like, I'm not ready to, like, listen to this right now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's just how it is. Was like, when you go through something heavy or feel it, you just got to first integrate it. And then, you know, the questions will come through after.
Right. Well, seeing Anjali writing to us and saying that she's listening, and listening helps her open up, reminds me of something that came up in the last class. Because she was in my last attached class, and I don't want to say who it was necessarily that had the experience, but it was really cool, because the discussion led me to ask this question: what do you need to do in order to be loved? What actions do you have to take? How do you have to be in order to be loved? Do you know what the answer is, Monica?
Well, I first got love myself. So.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. But the thing is, you can be loved even if you don't love yourself.
Mm.
Right.
Okay.
So the answer to that question is, well, let me ask it again. What do you need to do in order to be loved? The answer to that question is nothing.
Mm.
And we believe, so many of us believe that whatever that we have to do X and do Y and be a good this and be a good that in order to finally be loved. And we don't have to do anything. We get to just be.
Be.
And we will be loved.
Which is also presence, just being, you know, presence, just being. And I love that.
Yeah, something but you don't like, even do that.
Because that's also doing. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You can roll around on the ground because you like that and you'll be loved.
Yeah. It reminds me of like this whole like listening thing is usually when I'm learning something or in classrooms, I actually don't like asking questions because I like to integrate, you know, the information and like absorb it. A lot of times I'm not even taking notes because I'm trying to just let it come through me. So it's another form of like, I guess you could say unconditional love too, because it's giving that person that's teaching you or giving you, it's just that form of, okay, let me just hold space right now and just feel what they're trying to teach me or channel through. Because we're not getting any questions, we're spitting things out like constantly versus being dictated by these questions and steering where these conversations are going. It's like on the spot or on the fly, we're trying to think of ways to express what we're trying to express.
Right. Okay. So Jaybird asked a great question. He says, so I can start turning your suits into fancy origami hats and I would be loved unconditionally. Maybe not by me. But yes, you would be loved unconditionally. Yeah. So by the way, this is not nothing. This is intentionally doing things that the person that you're doing them to would not appreciate. So that's my best answer for that.
I would love to see one though, if she can do one for us.
Mm-hmm. This is going very well.
That means she's got to cut it up, though, right?
How long have we been doing this podcast? This has been, it's been over a year now, right?
Yeah, it's been a little over a year, yeah.
That really lasted a nice long time.
This is it. You're calling it quits now? You're giving up? You're suffering too much right now?
Oh my gosh, these hypotheticals are so great. What if her guides told her to do that? Maybe it's a suffering lesson. Yes, it would be a suffering lesson for you.
I love that we can hear her laugh. I think that just adds to it, you know?
Yep.
It's like the, ooh, like, yeah. I'm up to no good.
This is great. I'm waiting for the next question to come
in. Well, okay, hold on. So, because we met up with your group for the Cosmic TV, and this one lady is doing comedy. I feel like when I heard that you should be doing comedy shows with spirituality. Are you considering doing anything like that? Or
I haven't really considered doing a comedy thing. I haven't ever tried to do a stand-up comedy thing, though sometimes, you know, when I was doing my talks, as I was doing my circuit around the country before, you know, COVID, humor was getting integrated in more and more with what I was doing. And it was just kind of coming naturally. It wasn't like, okay, I've got this list of jokes that I'm going to do or whatever, but it was starting to come up.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, it's like your playfulness that comes out, and it's like what's that word called? Like reciprocating? Inviting? Huh? What was it?
I thought maybe you were going for inviting.
Yeah, I guess inviting works too, but there's like addicting. It's like addictive. It's like, oh, I want to know more, or like, oh, this is so cool. Like, it's like you're truly expressing yourself authentically through humor or just through like laughter. And it's like, oh, I want to be around you more. I feel like that's like what keeps people watching, you know, you or continuing to want to learn more about you.
Well, and really, if you think about it, that's the purpose of Cosmic, is to bring in stuff that you see or hear all the time, but bring it in a more entertaining way, so that it's not so heavy or it's not so serious all the time or whatever, to be able to say, okay, well, we've got a reality show, we've got a cooking show, we've got a, you know, a game show, and that would be, I mean, it would, wouldn't it be fun to do a game show, like some sort of like spirituality quiz show or something? I just think it would be great.
Like Jeopardy?
Yeah, like Jeopardy. Like,
Wheel of Fortune.
Yes. Yeah, you could totally do Wheel of Fortune.
The Andromedan Galaxy, you know, like just like some weird words or like light language codes that you're trying to decipher.
Yeah, but you can't cipher light language codes. But yeah.
Well, that's going to be the fun part. That's going to be the $1 million. That's going to be the $1 million thing. And look, right, we're already manifesting money here.
Oh my gosh.
Super chat.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. We got a super chat. We haven't had one of those in a while. Oh no, Johnny Boyd. It's not Johnny though. Oh my gosh. Why am Oh man, Johnny, I'm so sorry. It's not really Johnny. And all of a sudden I can't remember your name, which is terrible because you just gave us $20. So make me feel better. Remind me of your name again. And but I do know that it's not Johnny. And welcome back. It's wonderful to see you.
Eduardo. Yes.
Yay. Yay, Eduardo. Thank you, Eduardo. That's fantastic. Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm reading some of the comments here too. So yes.
Maybe we should do our Remembering Our Oneness, a Wheel of Fortune for spiritual words, or like some sort. Maybe we should do a game for our next podcast.
Oh, I see. We should do it here for this hour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like it could be fun.
Yeah. I don't know how we do it. We almost need like participants and. Yeah, we got to think about this.
Oh, I get it. How about, well, I guess you can make it an incentive. Like, I can give away a print or a little mini painting. And then you could do a little something, too, as, like, a gift that you want to do. Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, so once we have that, now, you know, I almost feel like it should be, like, a quiz show rather than a Wheel of Fortune thing. Just coming up with the, because the potential for learning something is not as strong. It's just like, oh yeah, it's the Andromedan Galaxy. Yay.
Well, yeah, I know. We're brainstorming.
Right. Great. Yes. Okay. So what's a good quiz show format?
It's like, what's that other game show with the A, B, C, D option?
Yeah. Yeah. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So we could do a version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire where we have a participant. So we'll have a third person on here that will
Jay Bird, right?
From the audience. Jay Bird, Anjali, somebody like that. Hello, Joel. Great to see you. Thanks for saying hi. We've totally derailed from our original conversation, Joel, and we're now talking
about... Oh my God, I love Anjali's message. Oh, sorry to cut you off.
No, that's all right. We've derailed, and we're talking about doing a spiritual game show, Joel. So give us your ideas, because we might do it on here in a little bit. Okay, so what you said... Who wants to be an ascended master? Yes. Absolutely. Who wants to be an ascended master? Oh my gosh.
I love it.
That is going to be on Cosmic. You have just created the most amazing thing. Oh, wow. Okay. Who wants to be an ascended master? And so we have to put together, I don't know how many questions they have on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. There's quite a few.
Funny. There's like a board game of it. Oh, in like a show.
Yeah. Yeah. So we would need to come up with our, you know,
it's like a chart. You like love, like you step up the ladder when you get it right type of thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I love this. It's amazing. I've got to really think about this. I got to watch Who Wants to Be
an episode
so I can like remember.
Well, because then like there can be like an ask the audience like type of action or like call a friend, phone a friend, or, you know. The elimination, the ABC, to make it easier.
Right.
I feel we need a blackboard or like some sort of thing to, or no, you could do it on your, can you pull up like something on the screen here?
Yeah, I should, I'm on my iPad right now, so there's not a screen sharing option, but if I did it on my PC.
Screen sharing. Yeah, we've done that before.
Yeah. We did a brainstorming session with our audience before. Yeah, I think it would be a great experiment. Okay, so who wants to be in the audience? Who wants to see if they're an ascended master? I have a feeling Anjali is going to want to do that. Oh, she's saying she's looking forward to watching it, right? she said me too after Jaybird said she's looking
for a boyfriend. Oh, but then she says me.
Oh, okay. Now she says, yeah. So Anjali can be our first contestant on Who Wants to Be an Ascended Master. I love that so much. Oh my gosh. This is so good. All right.
I think it's actually we can end the show. Yeah.
We managed to finish that really easily. Oh my god. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah. So she wants to be the winner.
Just to get a print for me.
Mm. Yeah. That's pretty awesome. All right. So we have some work to do. And I think it was Jaybird who suggested what she said. Oh yeah. Maybe advertise that for a few weeks before hosting it so we can have more participants. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I like that too. I mean, you know, cause I don't really advertise the heck out of this, as you know. But I would probably advertise the heck out of Who Wants to Be an Ascended Master.
Yeah. Cause then we can, get a pool of people and then we, you know, randomly select someone. So it's like done at random. Or we could do like increments where it's like a 15-minute period for people. That way we have four people within the hour or so, or just make it more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be fun if we randomly drew from the audience and then they came on, you know, but they would have to be able to connect up and everything. It could be a little bit on the slow side, but we could figure something like that out.
We have tons of people watching today and, you know, so.
Right. Right. Okay, so I want to answer this question from Vajiha. Is it possible for a medium to remove a spirit attachment from someone who suffers from an attachment? It depends on that medium. Some mediums do have the ability to do that, and some don't. The thing that we run into all the time, Faji, is, and I don't know if I'm saying your name right. You can fix me on that if you want. Is that those who can remove entities are generally very powerful and they can remove them. And the only thing to watch out for is if they come back again. And that's what I run into a lot, is that people, they'll go to, shamans and light workers, and they'll remove their entity for them and they'll feel really good for maybe a week, maybe a day. But if they aren't totally at the highest vibrational frequency, if they haven't stepped into their power, if they haven't corralled their mind to some degree, then they're going to end up just getting the attachment back. So it's really important that you go for a more of a holistic approach where you're learning all of those things as well as having the entity removed. And actually, if you learn all of those things, then you'll be able to remove your own entities and you won't have to deal with it anymore, which is exactly what I teach people how to do, by the way, if you're interested. So that's the answer to that question. Thanks for that great question. And so I will also post in here a little link that you can use if you wanted to talk to me about that. And we can go over it in more detail with you. It's so slow to type on an iPad.
Oh, Joel, I'm sure Zane will get back to you. He barely responds to my Facebook Messenger messages. So just hang tight.
Cool. Yeah, Joel, I will check my Facebook Messenger. We might not have been friends first, Joel. And so it might not have showed up in my regular list. I did kind of go through my list today, but it may be that I just need to look at the other list. And so I will be happy to do that, Joel. Because we've got another class starting up on Tuesday, actually. So I would love to get some people in.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for joining us until how to be an Ascended Master episode.
Yes. No, what is it called?
It's called something else. How to be an Ascended Master, yeah.
Who wants to be an Ascended
Master? Oh, who wants to be?
Right. Okay. Thanks, Anjali, for that great idea. Thanks, everybody, for your awesome questions and your responses and dialogue with each other. We enjoyed you very much today. So we'll see you next week.
Aloha.
Bye.